And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're devoting the entire evening to talking with psychics, mediums, intuitives about their own special area of expertise. And in a moment, Nan O'Brien joins us. So she's next on Coast to Coast AM. Nan O'Brien's intuitive gifts have resulted in an extraordinary life path, helping thousands of people. She works with families and law enforcement on unsolved criminal cases. And although Nan has received spiritual messages since she was a child, it wasn't until her adulthood that she embraced the possibility of these gifts publicly. She helps others to gain an understanding of their life purpose, their life lessons, communicating with loved ones who have passed into spirit, understanding directions for the future. We'll take calls with her in a half hour or so on Coast to Coast. Here she is, Nan O'Brien. Nan, how are you?
Good evening, George. I'm doing wonderful.
Good to have you with us. A medium, huh?
Medium, absolutely, but it's not like small and large, more like communicating with those who have passed.
Sure does. Are you glad you have this ability?
You know, I don't know what it is not to have this ability. I've been this way since I was a child, and I consider it a gift, and I consider it a blessing. I guess overall I'd have to say yes to that.
At what age, as a child, did people figure out, hey, this kid is talking to people who've passed on?
Well, I remember hearing voices as early as 3 and 4. I do know that when I would say things to my parents about people who had passed or would have feelings about something and then it would come true. I had my great-grandmother, for example, passed away, and I knew it the day and the morning that she passed with no reason for her to have done so, and she didn't live near us. I found pretty quickly that people got a little bit nervous about that, and that's when I really discovered that not everybody had this. And, of course, that's also when I stopped talking about it, too.
When little kids are talking to these imaginary, I'm going to put that in quotes,
sure,
these imaginary people, entities, whatever they may be, and, you know, parents initially think, oh, that's a little kid, they're having fun. And then eventually they try to get the kid to grow out of it, not to do it anymore. How many of them, if you just had to guess percentage-wise, are actually speaking and conversing with somebody on the other side?
I would say close to 100%.
Wow.
I believe that we all have that ability, and somewhere along the way, we're taught that this is imagination, this is not possible, because I think we're raised to believe there's here and there's there. There's, you know, being in physical and being in spirit, and there's this big wall in between. And because we have that belief, we instill that in our children, and so they have no other opportunity other than to kind of reconcile what we're saying with what they're experiencing, and I think that they get pulled to what we tell them that they should experience.
When did you realize, and I'm sure it was at a young age, but when did you realize that not everybody is perfecting these abilities like you were doing, that you had this ability to do these things?
The first time I remember really hearing something and being directed to help some others, I was about 5, and I was told when my father gave me $1 to go to get a popsicle, at the time when popsicles were 10 cents a piece, that it was the right thing to help give the money to the other kids that were standing there who didn't have $1. And it sounds kind of ironic, but I feel, you know, that it was just the right thing that I didn't end up with a popsicle and they all did. And I can remember walking down the driveway to my father trying to figure out how I was going to tell him, A, I didn't have change from his dollar, and B, when all was said and done, I didn't have my popsicle. And when he asked me why I did it, I said, because, you know, I was told to do that. He said, well, who told you? And I said, well, the people that talked to me. And I remember the look on his face, George, and it was, what do you mean, child? You know, you strange child. And that was really the earliest memory I have of hearing and being told something, being taught how to reach out to other people and how to make a difference and how to make others feel better.
Were all these entities friendly to you all the time?
Yes. I have never encountered personally anyone that has come to me in any way harmfully. I have helped other people who have been experiencing what they perceive as someone harmfully coming. But me personally, no. I've been very fortunate.
Is it because of who you are?
Because you know,
I would guess somebody else might be able to bring in these other forces.
Well, I think when you open yourself up energetically, anything can pop in, good, bad, or otherwise. Now, for example, when I do my work, I always start with prayer. I always do a prayer of protection, whether I'm talking to live audiences, whether I'm doing a private session. And that kind of operates as a filter. It would be very much like if you opened your window to let a breeze in on a summer's day. You're not going to just open the window. You're going to put a screen up to keep, you know, harmful things out and let the breeze come in. Well, that prayer of protection does the same thing. It keeps out things that are harmful, but it lets the good God energy come in.
I am just waiting now for some psychic or medium to say that they've now communicated with Michael Jackson. I know it's coming. I know it's coming.
Well, you know, it wouldn't surprise me, quite frankly. But even the way that mediums work is different. And mediums, I think, have a distinction between that and psychics. You know, I don't call myself a psychic. I consider myself a medium and an intuitive counselor, which is a little bit different.
And tell me the difference there. What do you mean by medium and intuitive counselor?
Well, the mediumship, of course, is connecting with those who have passed into spirit and opening yourself up and functioning kind of as an interpreter, where you can't change the message, you can't sugarcoat it or cherry pick it or interpret it, and you just have to repeat what's given to you, and it comes through you, not from you. The intuitive counseling is where I use intuition to actually counsel people instead of psychology, and so that is more about why are we here, life lessons, etc. To me, psychic, I would draw a distinction, is more about predictions, possibly using divination tools, whether it's cards or pendulums or things like that, not always. And I think that for me, my gift is more along the lines of helping people understand the why of things. So it's, why does something happen? A psychic, someone might ask a question, for example, am I going to meet somebody? And you might get a yes, somebody tall, dark, and handsome in 6 months. Well, that doesn't take into account the free will, free choice issue.
True.
For me, and that's why a lot of times predictions don't come true, quite frankly. It doesn't mean that the prediction is wrong. It just means that we can impose free will, free choice that alters that. And we do have that. For me, I would say, well, let's stop and talk about the why you're not in one to begin with. What's your life lesson? Okay, you have balance in your lesson. Because of that, you're better at giving than receiving. You choose men or women who are emotionally unavailable. You make selections of relationships out of need and not want. And so you're not getting the kind of relationship you want because you haven't addressed your life lesson. So you need to be in a relationship with you first, and then the right one can come in, but not until and unless that happens.
Okay, but these abilities are different from, let's say, prophecy, right?
I think that there is some distinction, although there are times when the information that I'm given has turned out to be prophetic. The book that I channeled, 31 Lessons from John, actually made some references to a 9/11, for example. And that was in 1997 that came to me, December of 1997, that book was written. And I saw the towers coming down as the information was coming through me and being channeled. But again, there's always free will, free choice, and we can impose that. And we have to remember that if that happens, then there's a safety net. You know, the person that commits the harm answers for it. The person who is harmed is taken care of in some way. So things continue to operate, but it's not always what we expect.
You're a pretty spiritual person. How important is that with what you do?
It's the foundation, George. You know, I was raised a Methodist. I was raised, you know, sang in the church choir, worked in the church nursery. And I think that there came a point in time when the gifts that I had and the things that I knew to some people seemed to be in conflict. Now, I feel what I do is biblically based. I feel it's a gift where you function as a messenger. There are people that are uncomfortable with that and point to biblical verse about conjuring up spirits. I don't consider that to be germane to me, but I've had to kind of battle that my whole life. But I think that spirituality and being spiritual is kind of the mortar between the bricks, where religion is the bricks, but the connectivity of faith between us all is where spirituality is. And I think that's where I dwell, where I'm open to all faiths. I think as long as you believe something, that's what's important. It's not
sure
what you believe. So for me, that's kind of cornerstone. That's at the center of what I do.
Nan, if you weren't spiritual, do you think you'd still possess these abilities or at least be able to tap into them the way you do?
I think I would possess them because I think we all do. I think everybody has it. I think it's the analogy that I use, because I use a lot of analogies in the work. I think it's a good way to hear things. It's like electricity in the wall. you know, it's always there, but you can sit in the dark and not have your lamp plugged in. You can sit and not be aware of it. And I think if you plug into it and with that expectation that, yes, that lamp is going to turn on, that's a walk of faith when you get up and you go and plug into it. You expect that that light's going to come on, but it doesn't change the fact that the electricity is there and available.
Tell me about your work with families in law enforcement. I just had a few guests on before you came on, the Side Twins. They don't get many calls from law enforcement. Their thoughts are that, you know, the police probably feel they would be ridiculed or, you know, they just don't want that kind of publicity to say that they went to a medium or someone intuitive or a psychic to get information. But you do. And tell me how that works for you.
Well, it's interesting because I do work with families and law enforcement, and a lot of times it's the families that come to me first. And I think that your prior guests are probably right to some degree that many people in law enforcement, because it's a very much of a science, are uncomfortable with it. But what I have experienced is the families will come to me sometimes frustrated because they're not getting information. Sometimes the investigation is stalled out and they ask.
Almost a last-ditch attempt?
I think so. I think that out of desperation and pain, they will reach out to anything. And if you have a reputation where people feel that you're trustworthy, they'll reach out to you. For example, my law enforcement work is pro bono, so there's no motivation. I have nothing to gain other than to help people by doing it. That's one of the ways that I give back. And so through the mechanism of being able to share information with them that they generally take back to the law enforcement, you'll have some law enforcement that's going to be open to it and some that's not. Now, for example, I had a case in South Georgia. I used to live in Atlanta years ago.
Okay.
And there was a gentleman whose brother had been murdered. And they couldn't find anything. And they heard about me. They came to me. And I went to the house. And I was able to experience through the perpetrator's eyes and also through their brother's eyes what happened and to come up with a lot of information about who had done it, how it had happened, and why. They took that to the law enforcement. And God love the detective there, Mike Tovey, I'll never forget it, and he always serves as a reference for me because you need that, drove 2.5 hours to Atlanta and sat down with me for several hours and said, tell me what you think you know. That's how it started, very politely skeptical. Tell me what you think you know. And so I shared with him. I said, I don't know what all this means. And generally, George, to be honest, I don't. I it's not my place to interpret what I get.
Right.
You know, I just facilitate it. And he sat there and he took down the information. And when we were all done, he looked at me and he said, you know, you knew things that, A, we haven't told outside of the police, B, that connects the dots of the things that didn't make sense, and C, some things we didn't know at all that I know make sense. I don't care where you're getting your information. You get something, you call me.
Was there ever a point where they looked at you as a possible suspect?
No, but I can tell you there was a time before I was willing to be open in public that I did not come forward for that very reason.
Yeah.
And it was a case in Mount Kisco, New York, and it was a young boy who had disappeared New Year's Eve. And I saw a poster the next day that he was missing. He was a young man that would have come home after New Year's Eve, and he didn't. And they already had the posters up. And I was with my oldest son. I have 4 children. And I saw the poster, and it just flew out of my mouth, George. I said, he's in the East River under the Brooklyn Bridge on the Brooklyn side, and he's dead.
Ugh.
And my son looked at me. He goes, well, you have to call them. I'm like, no way. And he's like, Mom, why not? I said, first of all, I'm not going to tell a mother her son is dead. Second of all, I was alone last night, and if I'm right, I have no way to prove that I wasn't a part of it. No, 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 not doing it. I'm ashamed to say that a little bit, but I'm going to be honest with you because this is before I was really open in public, and it's what made me decide to be open and to embrace the responsibility of the gift, really. They found the young man 4 months later, George, in the East River under the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, my God.
And I felt so guilty that I had allowed this family to suffer for 4 months because of, out of ego, being afraid of being wrong and ridiculed or being right and hurt, that I vowed then and there that if God had entrusted me with this gift, that out of integrity, I had to embrace the saying, and which I just love, what talents and abilities you have is God's gift to you. What you do with them is your gift to God. And whatever my gift was, if I had it, it was selfish of me not to share it. And that really changed my life.
What kicks in for you when you do that? Let's say, when you get information on a murder case, is it the medium part of you because a person has died and maybe you're getting information that way, or is it the intuitive part of you?
Well, I think I use the intuition and listen intuitively to the mediumship. For example, I was asked to consult on a case, the Jody Huizentrude case. You might remember that. She was a news broadcaster up in Iowa.
Oh, yeah. Sad story.
And Gary Peterson, who was a gentleman who was a television broadcaster at the time, asked me to come in on the case. He had heard about me by reputation. And I went to the site, and when I arrived where she had been kidnapped, it was as if she were inside me, and she took me through the whole scenario of what happened, how it happened. I said, and we filmed this, actually. I said, put me in the car, turn right, turn left, turn right, turn left. I'd never been to Iowa. Took me to the place where I believe she was taken. She channeled a map to me that had 12 points of affirmation that we found, because Gary knew the area, where this place was. And it was over the state line in Minnesota. And we got to the point, I said, I feel like she's here. And the Minnesota state police said, well, this is an Iowa case. We're not paying for it. And the Iowa people said, well, she's in Minnesota. We're not paying for it. And I'm sitting here going, I feel sure that I could bring closure to this family. And yet we're stalled out on this case. And so, you know, but it's from what Jody was telling me. I never met her. I never knew about her. And I kept seeing her face. And I heard her telling me, this is what happened. This is what was said. This is what I felt. This is what I experienced. This is where they took me.
Didn't somebody, did they break into her apartment and grab her or something like that?
She was going to the parking lot on her way to be on air. She was a morning news anchor. And she was abducted and disappeared seemingly into thin air.
Now, there was another case about a year or so ago where I think somebody had broken into this anchor woman's apartment.
Yes.
And that's the one I thought you were talking about. Okay, so that's a different case.
That's a different case. Jody's been missing, quote-unquote missing, for about 12, 13 years now.
Okay.
And they have not finalized. And interestingly, when I was speaking with Gary, he asked me questions. A lot of time that's a trigger for me, and that's where the intuitive part kicks in, I think, because I was getting the descriptions of the inside of her apartment, the person that she was there, what she was feeling, what the conversations were, and a lot of the information tied into the police investigation. But that was the case where the police wanted nothing to do with me. They said, we've heard from all these kind of people, and you get that, quote-unquote, these kind of people.
Yeah, of course.
You know, as if you have an agenda. There's no agenda here, but I think that the law enforcement people that are open to it should see it as a tool, not a competition. But it varies, and it frustrates me, because the ultimate goal is to make the family feel better and to bring them closure and healing and peace. Do we really care what it takes to get to that? You know, for me, it gets very frustrating.
Do you use your dreams at all, Nan?
I don't generally. In a dream state, a lot of times you can have visits with loved ones, but that's been more on a personal nature. My mother passed from breast cancer about 7.5 years ago, and in my dream state, I get to visit with her. You know, there's a distinction between a dream and a visit. I don't know if you're familiar with that. If anybody...
Well, you know, I was just going to ask you that. How do we know if we're not just dreaming of something that's important to us in our lives? How do we know it's not indeed a real visit?
Well, it's actually really easy to draw the distinction between the two. Dreams are very disjointed. They aren't real. We're in our house, but it's not really our house. And suddenly we're on the ball field, and suddenly we're in Africa, whatever. You know, it doesn't really make sense. A visit feels very real. There's a very different timbre to it. There's a very different sense to it. So, for example, in my most recent visit for my mom, I was coming out of the grocery store. And I could feel my hands on the cart. I was aware of the parking lot, the cars, the people around me. And I saw my mother loading groceries into the trunk of a car in the parking lot. And my first thought was, oh, wow, there's mom. And then all of a sudden it hit me, but that can't be my mom, because she's never been to Vermont and my mother is dead. And yet I'm looking at her, and it was as real as I'm sitting here. And I went up to her and I said, hi, you know, mom. And she goes, hi, honey, I just came to tell you I'm happy for you. I'm proud of you. I love you. And then I said, but you're dead. And she said, but I'm very much alive in your heart. And I woke up. When you have the awareness in the dream state that that person looks younger a lot of times,
sometimes
has a glow, healthier if they've been ill, and you realize they shouldn't be there because they're dead, that's a visit.
That's a visit. Nan, stay with us. We're going to chat more about some of your work. You're also a syndicated columnist. We'll talk about that. And we'll also take phone calls. Nan O'Brien, our guest this hour. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Hey, the After Dark magazine is available to you, renewing or subscribing, brand new, 727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. When we come back, more with Nan O'Brien. Her website, she's got a couple linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, Nan O'Brien with us. She is a medium and intuitive counselor. And tell me about your syndicated column.
I am so excited. Earlier this year, I worked with a partnership with the Tribune Companies to do a column called Intuitively Yours by Nan O'Brien that is on all of their broadcast affiliate sites, and we also have it linked from my website. And basically, George, it's a column that is spiritual advice. People can write me questions, and I answer the questions specifically, but then because there are so many more questions than I can possibly answer, you know, in one amount of time, I try and do what I call a checkpoint at the end, and it's a spiritual wrap-up. It explains the spiritual basis behind the answer so that other people can relate to it. So it's a wonderful opportunity to reach other people and a way for people to reach me as well.
Well, it's interactive, like this show, and that, I think that's so important, Nan.
Absolutely.
Let's go. And speaking of interactive, let's go to Orange County. Out there in California, Matt, you're up there west of the Rockies. Matt, go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, I read your book, George. I like it a lot. That's a lot of fun. I love your show. Nan, thanks for being on, too.
Thank you, Matt.
Question for you is simply, I'm having the worst trouble learning to meditate, and I was wondering if you could, you know, steer me.
You know, Matt, I feel like you already do. You have a really strong sense of music around you, and you're in your car a lot. And when you drive and when you're thinking and when you're also involved with your music, in a very real way, you're meditating. I think people get kind of caught up in the idea that, you know, meditating means you have to sit in a certain position and you have to key into something. Really, meditation is just quiet contemplation. So I think it's just semantics here, Matt. I think that you're already doing it. You just don't realize it.
I think I meditate too much sometimes, Nan, when I'm driving, because haven't you ever gotten to that point where you drive from point A to point B and you don't remember getting there?
Oh, for sure. And that really is what happens. You know, we get into that other length or that other wavelength of thinking, and we're kind of on automatic pilot. But, you know, you do contemplate while you're doing that, and so you alter that energy and that consciousness, and it allows you to really have some understanding you wouldn't have otherwise.
I think meditation is really just going deep within yourself and just finding that calming feeling, isn't it?
I would agree with that totally.
Matt, just keep practicing, keep going for it. Let's go to our first-time caller in Joliet, Illinois. Scott, it's your turn. Hey, Scott.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I had a question for Ms. O'Brien.
Okay.
I was wondering if she had heard of the Peterson case in Illinois.
The Stacey Peterson case?
Yeah.
Yes, actually, Gary Peterson, no relation, does work with Equisearch, and informally he had asked me to consult on that case.
Okay. They haven't had too many leads on that yet, so just wondering if maybe you could answer any questions on that.
That's something that when I'm in the midst of what is a criminal investigation, Scott, I don't comment publicly, but I have definitely made myself available to both Equisearch and to the authorities. Again, that's a situation whether they're willing or not to listen, but I did receive information as soon as I was asked about it on that case.
Nan, do you ever go out and do some of these on your own? Example, the Natalie Holloway case where she disappeared in Aruba some time ago. Does anybody just ever go out and say, I'm going to get the answers myself?
If the information comes to me, I do try and make overtures toward the people that are in charge to say, I would like to share this with you. Actually, Natalie Holloway is another case that Gary Peterson is involved with, and I got information on that as well, had contemplated going and checking out what it was that I had received. Another one that I have tried to reach out is the young Madeline Kahn. And you know, it's hard because when the high-profile cases, there are a lot of people they're trying to help. I'm one of many, and there are many people that have a gift, and so I think it's hard to be on the other end for people to, in law enforcement or powers that be, to kind of filter who do we talk to, who do we not, who's legitimate, who isn't. The motivation is pure either way, but you know, I think that's probably why sometimes you don't get the response. But having the information and not having anywhere to go with it probably is one of the more frustrating parts of this kind of work.
Nan, in your work, your books, your audio books as well, you talk about various lessons from John, Spiritual Guidance for Living. Tell me about that.
In December 1997, I heard a voice as I was going to bed that said, pick up the pen. And it's the voice that actually told me about the popsicle, tying it back to that.
Okay.
And a voice I've had my whole life, but I never had a name attached to it. And my hand started writing across the page by itself, George. It kind of freaked me out, to be honest. Even for me and some of the circumstances I'd had, it was a little bit out there for me. And at the same time my hand was writing, I was hearing what was being written, and I was told, it said, I am John. I was told John was an angel, which is an entity who has never been in physical form, and that I had been chosen to write a book about God's love and light, and that I was to practice this form of communication, and that after the holidays we would write a book together. It turns out that December 1st was when John decided we needed to start, and so for each night of the month of December, I was given a different lesson. And by the end of December, I had a book. And here's the really amazing thing, George. The total time it took to write the entire book was 18 hours, 15 minutes.
18 hours? That's it?
That's it. And it is an amazing book. I've had people tell me that it's changed their lives. And it's basic, simple lessons, love, patience, courage, trust, justice, dealing with hate. And it's beautiful prose, beautiful poetry, told in a way that I never could. And I don't claim authorship of this. I participated in the process. But even though I'm a published author, even though I even made my living as a writer for years, these are not my words. They were totally inspired. And it is just a beautiful, beautiful body of work. And it's actually the primer to what I do. I base a lot of what my understanding of the world is on this information that was given to me.
If a family asked for your help, mm-hmm. and you felt as if their loved one was dead, murdered, would you be direct with them? I mean, even before, let's say, the police have found the body, would you say, you know, your child has died or something like that, or do you not tell them?
I have to. There are rules to the work that I do, and truth and integrity is always the paramount part of that work. I actually recently had this situation happen. There was a gentleman who went missing in Connecticut a few weeks ago, or about 2 months ago, by the name of Jody King. And the family contacted me, and I had to tell his wife, I said, I'm getting a lot of information about what happened, and for me to get this much, he can't be here. And I'm sorry to tell you that. I would love to be wrong, but the way that I'm receiving the information, I'm receiving it from the spiritual side. And unfortunately, they did find him about a week ago.
Sometimes you wish you were wrong.
You know, that's true. And I'm not always right. And I'm the first one to say it. Anybody that does this kind of work that says that they're always right, are, if you're even keeping track, to me, that's ego. What I always promise people is that I'll give them my best. But a lot of times, I don't know what it means. And I present the information, and then I've done what I was supposed to do. What they do with it, whether they hear it, whether they understand it, then it's kind of a handoff. You can't interject ego into the process. You can't put your spin on it. You can't interpret the information. You really have to function as a vehicle where it comes through you, not from you.
Okay. And just so I want to clear up something, just so people aren't confused, when we got the call about Stacy Peterson, mm-hmm. And you, I know you can't comment a lot about that because you're involved in it. Gary Peterson is with Equisearch, right?
He does do work with them.
Work with them.
And that's great.
And apparently Drew Peterson was a suspect, and he's related to Stacy.
Right.
There's too many Petersons involved in this.
Oh, it is. And Gary is not a relation. He actually is a medical examiner, and he is also a coroner. And he had started out in news broadcasting. And so, as I say, he had heard about me, and he's asked me to consult on several cases, some informally, some formally.
Right. Okay, let's go next to Orange Park, Florida, east of the Rockies. Sue, take it away. Hi, Sue.
Hey, George. I'm so grateful for your work and for what you do. And I say thank you. And Nan, I hope I find favor in the sight of the Creator and in your eyes as I ask this question, because I have the, what I call it is the radio when I hear what I need to hear, and then I just give it out like a radio, just like George does. So that's I'm intuitive. But my question to you is, in the near future or in the future, what do you see the job source going out to work doing? In other words, what type of jobs do you see us doing? Because some of us are looking for jobs.
Boy, Sue, do I hear that. And I've had that question a lot lately in the work that I do. For you personally, I think that you need to be willing to embrace the intuitive part of you as well. You know, my sense of you, Sue, is that even from a young age, you felt like there was something you had to do, something you had to accomplish, that you were to make a difference. But you feel like you're behind schedule because you haven't figured out what it is yet.
You're right. And my friend keeps saying, use the intuitive side of myself, and we've been praying for Haley down here in Florida, 6-year-old that's been missing. She keeps saying, go to the police, and I was just like you, saying, no, I can't. I don't, you know, I'm too embarrassed, but I will try to embrace that, and I do thank you for, you know, that, and I would ask for your thoughts towards her.
That is also something that I've been asked, so unfortunately it's inappropriate because it's ongoing to comment on it. I will say, in terms of you and taking it back to you, Sue, that I still rest on the saying, what talents and abilities you have is God's gift to you. What you do with them is your gift to God. Whether it's numbers, whether it's art, whether it's music, whether it's intuition, it would be as if God came to your door and handed you this beautiful jewel-encrusted vase and said, here's this gift, Sue. And you said, oh, thank you, God. Let me go stick it under the bathroom sink behind the toilet paper. Okay? By not using it. It really is about embracing it. And if you use those gifts, your material needs will be met. So I want to really encourage you to do that.
The JonBenet Ramsey case, have you looked at that at all, Nan?
Yes, I have.
Can you comment on it?
You know, that's another one. I reached out to the attorney on the case, and having been in Atlanta, I never believed that the family was involved. I do believe that what started out as a connection to the father, someone related to his work, there really was the desire to have a kidnapping, and it went awry. That was my sense. But I was glad that the family was vindicated ultimately, because it was just a witch hunt, I think, what happened with that family, and breaks my heart. There's no way that family was involved.
Okay, next up, let's go to Seattle, Washington. Bruce on the wild card line. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good.
I have a question for you. How can one tell that they're clairvoyant or, you know, a medium or anything like that?
You know, I think the question is not questioning it, Bruce. When you receive information that you know is external, where you suddenly know something and you didn't know it a moment before, where you get an impression of someone. For example, we all have this. We're thinking about our best friend, and the phone rings, and it's our best friend.
Uh-huh.
Or the phone rings, and we know it's our best friend. That's intuition. We all have it. To be able to experience, for example, clairvoyance, for me, it's like seeing a photograph in my head or a film in my head. For example, if I said to you, okay, Bruce, imagine what your mother's face looks like, you would see an image in your head, and it would be evoked by my question based on a memory. Well, if someone else asks you a question and you're clairvoyant, you're going to see that same image invoked by the question based on intuition, not memory. And so it's something that is external that you experience without you seeking that information.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, thanks. Let's go next to Elmhurst, Illinois. Mary, it's your turn, and thanks for holding, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just wondering how the country is going to fare with all the changes the Obama administration is bringing.
Now, does the intuitive part of you, Nan, ever look at that?
Very much so. Interestingly, even when we were going through the campaign, looking at the life lesson plan of all the candidates was quite interesting to see how they approach things. And I think President Obama is consistent with his life lessons, which is there is an openness about him and a youth to his energy as a soul. I feel that through his leadership as president of our country right now, we're all being forced to confront what's important in our lives, whether you agree with him or whether you don't. And I certainly try and stay out of that the political fray. We are all being confronted to look at how we're making our living, for example, and what we're doing. And I think those of us that are losing jobs, we need to pay attention to the blocks. We need to say, for example, maybe I lost my job because I really hated my job, and ultimately this is a blessing in disguise, and I need to go back to school. I think the country ultimately will come through this because I believe in the spirit of our country. That's the collective belief in freedom. And I think it will right itself, but I think from the process, it will end up being a wonderful exercise in prioritizing.
Okay, next up, we move on to Appleton, Wisconsin. Sherry, it's your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, I just love your show, and I've listened to it for like, 15, 20 years, and I can't even go to sleep at night.
Well,
I
thanks for joining
I have to set my
us.
Birth recorder, and I have to tape anything that's really, really interesting, make my husband listen to it.
Well, you're doing it all the right way.
Yeah, that's right. I just had a couple of questions about the afterlife. Some things happen sometimes to myself where I can't find something. And first of all, I was very close with my parents and with my identical twin. And I miss them very much. I only knew my twin for about two days. And I will be missing something, and all of a sudden, I will hear a voice. Look over there, or look behind there. And like a ring that I lost, and it showed up. My mother's engagement ring, and it showed up. Do you ever hear from your loved ones?
Oh, definitely, Sherry, definitely. And that's called being clairaudient, which is literally clear hearing. And that's another way that many people that are intuitive do work, is that they hear things. And so I have no doubt that your loved ones who loved you when they were in physical form continue to love you from spirit are helping you. You know, it's not like there's a here and a there. They're really, our loved ones in spirit are right next to us. It's more like they're behind a two-way mirror, and they're watching, and they're right there for us.
These helpers that are out there as well, Nan, do they do this on their own in the afterlife, or are they like told to help us?
I think that the inherent purpose that as souls we all have is to help one another. And when we're in spirit, because there's no ego, it's the natural state to reach out and to do that.
Okay, next up we go to Seattle, Washington, west of the Rockies. Bethany, go ahead.
Hi there. I was wondering if you could tell me what are the best ways that we could communicate to those on the other side, and how can we best remain open to receiving communication?
All right. How do we do that, Nan? We all have the ability.
I think the first thing is that we have to believe that it's possible. And one of the analogies that I think is wonderful is that 40 years ago, if anybody had put a little box in our hands and had said, oh, you punch these numbers and you can talk to your mother on the other side of the country, we never would have believed it. And yet now we have cell phones, and we don't think twice about it. We don't pick up the phone and say, I wonder if I'll hear somebody on the other end of the phone. So our perception has changed. And I think that is one of the most critical components toward our being able to embrace and listen, is believing that you can. And when you hear it, trusting what you hear and trusting what you know and not dismissing it.
Nan, how do people get a hold of you?
The best way is nanobrien.com, my website. Everything you ever wanted to know, and maybe more than you wanted to know, is on that website.
Well, good luck in your work, specifically with law enforcement as well. I think you're providing an incredible service as a tool for law enforcement.
Thank you, George. I appreciate it, and I so appreciate having the opportunity to be on your show. And I, like everyone else tonight, am a very big fan.
Well, anytime you come on back. Nan O'Brien has been our guest this hour. Our extravaganza of mediums, psychics, and intuitives continues in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.